Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, Tom Williams has a phone interview with James Dunn. He will be talking about his latest show, Resort 76, now playing at Raven Theater. Also, for our review segment, Tom Williams will be talking to Al Bresloff about some of the shows now playing on Chicago stages. And of course, as always, we have Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax, and get ready to talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is from a terrific play that just came out called Resort 76. It is at Raven Theater on Clark Street. It's produced by Infamous Commonwealth Theater. And my guest today is one of the stars of the show, James Dunn. Hello, James.
Hello. How are you doing?
Great. Tell us about Resort 76. Give us a little idea what the show is about, enough information so that the listeners will be interested in coming up to Raven to see it.
Okay. Well, the show is it's a period piece. It's set in the Lodz Ghetto. Well, somewhere similar to the Lodz Ghetto in Poland around the time of World War II. So it's essentially a piece about these eight people who work in a factory that makes carpets. And they make carpets out of basically old clothing of people who have been slain in the ghetto and other places throughout Europe. And this little factory is basically the only thing that's keeping them alive. As soon as they don't fulfill their function, which is making these wares for the SS, essentially, they'll be deemed unusable and basically people who don't serve any purpose. So it's very important to them that they keep on producing their wares. And throughout the course of this, there is a character who finds a cat, essentially, and they can use this cat as currency inside the ghetto.
Because it's really a story about survival, right?
Yes, very much. How bleak these circumstances are, that how minuscule something such as a cat can be a survival can hinge on.
Yeah, no, don't give away what happens though, because that's what people want to come to see the show about. But one of the things I liked about the show was what you guys did with the set and the clothing. I mean, you looks like we're walking right into one of those resorts, which is a euphemism for one of those ghetto apartments.
Yeah, essentially what was going to be done with the set it was supposed to look essentially like a factory, like the factory itself, and the outside it would be covered in this twine and fabric, so it looks as though you're looking at a factory through the sort of hazy gauze of the material they're using. So they themselves are part of the machine. There's a cog that we have on the right side of the stage that we use at the beginning of the show, right when the show starts, to sort of get you into this slow gear type movement that the show kind of lives in, because it's kind of these people are essentially grinding into each other over and over and over again until they get their final outcome.
You know, early in the show, it gets the feel of a Bertolt Brecht show. But really, when you read the notes, and anyone who knows the history of that era, that there were places like this.
Yes,
and that these people did live this way, where they were living on a loaf of bread a week and some watered down soup. I mean, it was incredible.
Yes, sometimes even less than that. Those are the people who those are the people who played by the rules. There was so much bureaucracy, even amongst the Jews in these situations. Of course, the main oppressors were the Germans and the SS and the German army, but basically the hierarchy that was set up within the ghettos themselves was pretty tyrannical.
Yeah, there's the one character, the one Jewish guy. He thought he could save people by being mean, and he actually turned out to be almost as bad as the Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the power corrupting thing. There's going to be a certain amount of people who rise to any occasion and even exploit their fellow exploited in every occasion, and that happens across the board. And that certainly was one of the situations that happened in these ghetto situations.
But so the listeners understand, this show is not without a lot of gallows humor in it. I mean, tell us about some of the quirky characters you have in the show.
Well, yeah, there's Josh Sumner, who plays Hubert, who is kind of a character who is in love with American pop culture, makes a lot of American pop culture references.
He dreams that he's a movie maker, right? A
filmmaker, yeah. Essentially thinks that that's going to be his ticket out of this place, and his ticket he wants to make movies to get people's minds off of everything, and he's also very concerned with money, of course, as many people were. But he thinks that with his scattered knowledge of all these pop culture references, that he has what it takes to be a director.
He also wants to spread his optimism by stating that he has a shortwave radio and that he has news, and he sort of invents it as he goes along.
Right. Yeah. His heart's in the right place. He's one of those people where they think they're doing the right thing, but essentially what they're doing is just ultimately lying to people and filling people with non-reasoned hope. Yeah. He brings back these reports that he supposedly has heard over his shortwave radio that leads all of us in the camp to believe that, you know, the end is right around the corner, and the sun is setting on the horizon, and all we need to do is wait. But there's actually not a whole lot of truth to that.
I like Paul Joseph's character too.
And yeah,
I mean, even with his look and everything, he reminded me of kind of a nasty Fagin sort of character.
Yeah, he is. Well, Paul likes to. Paul really, really gets into his. Gets into his roles, and he's done a lot of borderline method preparation with this character. He is Yablanka, the character who Paul plays, is pretty much the quintessential survivor. You know, there's not a situation that you can throw him in that he is not going to. He's going to make it out of there somehow. He's kind of the cockroach of these settings, and I really like the way that Paul kind of gave him a hard edge, but ultimately he's a very human character.
Yeah, and that's kind of what comes off with all of them is as tough as they can be and trying to survive, that there's a dignity and a humanity among these people that comes across in the writing and in the way you guys played it.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I like about Scheinman Winselberg's script so much, is that these people were funny. These people in these situations were funny, completely human people who at times were trying to make the best of these horrible situations. And I think, you know, there's so many pieces about this period, all of which are valid in one way or the other, but it's always nice to see people playing against the dire, you know, situations and trying to at least intellectually rise above the situation. And I think that's what the characters in this show try to do.
Yeah, well, tell us about your character, because you play this the foreman, and you are the leader of the group, but you're not either charismatic, and you're not this commanding leader, but in a very laid back way. You're respected, and you are clearly in charge.
Well, I think Blaustein, the character that I play, he's kind of the reluctant hero. He doesn't want to necessarily be in this situation, but lo and behold, here he is. So he doesn't look for any trouble. He doesn't look for anything to overcome, but as the situations come to him, he deals with them one at a time. And I think that's because, you know, he's got a lot of personal things going on. In the show, my wife, Esther, we're having problems of our own. She's pregnant, and we're having sort of a moral and ethical dilemma about that.
Do you want to have the baby? Which probably wouldn't survive. I mean, that's a very tough dilemma.
Yeah, it is. You know, on one hand, she's pregnant, and it's something we've wanted for so long. But at the same time, do we dare bring a child into this sort of situation? And then on top of that, all of these people, quirky and some of them, you know, just mean, all need me for one thing or another. And so it's kind of a tale of a guy who's just slowly being worn down and worn down and worn down.
Yeah, and I thought you did a terrific performance, because it would be easy to overplay the role, and that would have made the character less human.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I tried to put as much of myself into, because I mean, barring some huge differences, I think, you know, I can really relate to Blaustein, you know, age-wise, similar outlook on life. You know, I think we're both optimists, to a certain point, to the point where you actually have to look at your life and make some real decisions, you know.
Yes. Well, that's what comes across very much in the play, is they all know that, in effect, they're kind of doomed, but they all have this optimistic outlook. I mean, the assumption isn't like when we go to the gas chamber. The assumption is when we get out of here, when the war is over.
Right. And I think that, you know, you have to have that outlook. If otherwise, you know, you'd be swinging from a tree somewhere. You know, yeah. There has to be something inside of you that thinks you're going to get out of here alive, and thinks that you're going to get out of here and back to better times. And I think, just theatrically concerned, that's something amazing to see, to be sitting on that precipice of, are these people going to make it? Because if we already play that we're doomed, then you know, we're not going to have a lot of people hanging on and watching us for this 2-hour ride that we go on, hour and 45-minute ride.
Well, but you do keep us engaged, because there's a basic dignity and humanity that comes out. Because each one of you have to make a decision on what to do with the cat.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's very, very much an ensemble piece in that respect, because the cat touches every single person's life, and every single person in the world of the show, you see how they react, you see how they feel, and you see how they feel about pretty much everything, because pretty much everybody is on stage throughout the length of the show.
Yeah, it is a nice ensemble piece, and I thought it was beautifully written and nicely directed, with a pace to it that keeps you going and still allows, you know, the timing was there for some of the gallows humor and some of the other poignant moments.
Yeah, it really is. It's one of those pieces that kind of feeds itself. As long as you have a group of characters that are really committed to the words, then it's all just right there for you. It's brilliantly written and realized.
Yes, it is. And I thought the acting was terrific from everybody. All right, time for a little commercial for the show. It's Resort 76, and it's playing Raven Theater.
Raven Theater in there.
Which is at 6157 North Clark. And what days do you play?
We are Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights at 8:30,
okay.
And then Sundays at 3:30.
Okay, and is there a phone number for tickets? Tickets are only $20, right?
Tickets are $20, and we do, if you check on our website, I'm not exactly sure what the dates are, but we do offer some breaks to theater folks.
Okay, well, at the infamous Commonwealth Theater's website.
Yes.
Okay, and I have a number here they can call for information, 312-458-9780.
Yes.
Okay, and... I'll tell you, it's a fun show, and you guys at Infants Commonwealth Theater have done some terrific shows. The Kentucky Cycle you guys did was just amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was lucky enough to be a part of that cast as well. That was one of my first introductions into Chicago theater, too, because I had recently moved here from Omaha, Nebraska. Well, from Lincoln, Nebraska, where I went to college. And, yeah, right? Mac in the middle of a 7-hour show with a 22-person cast. It was really an excellent way to be inducted into Chicago theater because I pretty much made every connection I could ever need for the rest of my acting life here during that one show.
Yeah, well, it had one of the best casts of non-equity players that you'd want to see. And I'll tell you, it was as good a production as some of the big boys have done, and a lot of them, quite frankly, passed on Kentucky Cycle, figuring it was just too tough to do.
Yeah, I can sympathize with those companies who love the script, want to do it, and then start to slowly realize what all of that would take, and then maybe are a little discouraged by it. But Infamous Commonwealth Theater is a company that it crosses every T, dots every I, and they really... we really, because I'm now an artistic associate with them, they really took the time to realize how much that show was going to take, realize all the work that was going to be involved, planned it for a year, and then went in and decided to do it. And it was one of the most rewarding theater experiences that I have ever been a part of. And it's also one of those shows that I'm bummed that I could never sit in the audience and watch it. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, it was terrific to watch. I saw both parts of it on the same day, and so did a big group of us, and no one left. we couldn't wait for it because it was quite an epic, and there were some terrific performances in that show.
Yeah, I was really, really happy to be a part of that project.
Yeah, and then you did another one I saw, Living the Dream.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, Living the Dream is a show that I did with a theater company that I created. At the time, we were called Set a Spell Productions, but now we're called The Plagiarists. And we're just now incorporating and getting all of those technical, non-fun theater aspects out of the way before we become a full-fledged non-for-profit. But, yeah, it's a show that we wrote and workshopped in the process of about 2 months. After we found out that another show that we were going to do, we lost the rights for.
So it's kind of what happens to all young actors when they come to Chicago to do their art, in auditions and all sorts of things. Because I thought it was very funny, and I told a lot of actors to go see it. I don't know how many of them went, but
well, actually, we had a lot of actors in the crowd, and it's funny. Since I had people come up to me, in fact, people in this show who were like, oh my goodness, I saw that show, I can't believe it, you guys hit it, you know, hit the nail right on the head. And it was so much fun to write because it was all pretty much based on true things, and it was really cathartic to be able to talk about all of those struggles and all of those things.
But also seemed quite honest. You guys weren't afraid to just say it the way it is, both good and bad. Yeah, I mean, you weren't trying to make yourselves look like heroes. It was realism.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, it's hard to lie about that because people know that it's pretty much all struggle. when you're trying to get work until you get a regular gig, you know, it's all struggle. You're always hustling, you know, so there's no...
Yeah, and you're working as waiters or
fast
food.
Yeah, we all still do. Yeah,
is that right?
After the show, we're all pretty much waiting, temping, anything you can name collectively as an ensemble we have done.
Well, everyone always asks me why you guys do it.
Well, That's so many different reasons. That is, that's kind of the question. I do it because I think that's the way that I am happiest expressing myself artistically.
So you feel like you have to do it?
I do. I mean, I of course like to do many other things creatively, and but I think the one that resonates the most with me and the one that I feel that I make the biggest impact at is theater and acting. As theater as a medium, you know, entirely, but acting more personally, because it's something that I really, I don't know, I just like to wrap my head around these different characters and these different people. I think it makes me stronger creatively, and it also, I feel like I actually have something to share with an audience.
Okay, give us your background now. You're from Nebraska.
I'm from Nebraska. I got my BA at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, or as I like to call it, the Yale of the Heartland, which is not true at all.
I won't even attempt that.
Yeah,
Lanford Wilson wrote enough about that.
So I worked, acted there, you know, went to college there for 4 years, and then moved out to Chicago in 2002, and have acted with several groups in Chicago, and have...
What brought you to Chicago? Because I hear this from so many actors.
Well,
why Chicago? Yeah, not like New York.
I honestly, like, first and foremost, I think it was the fact that I had friends here. And I had a strong base of people, acting and non-acting, who already lived here. And I think their reason for coming here was, especially among my peer group, is Chicago really seemed like the place where the ideas come from. And then
it
may or may not be perfected, you know, someplace else. But this is where it's a real... it seems that this is where things are hashed out, and this is where...
That's true. It's not happening in New York because of costs and
right.
And opportunity. You know, it's a musical comedy town and a spectacle town where they don't really have a storefront theater community like we have here.
Right. Exactly. This is where the nuts and bolts of theater is created. Things are created on smaller scales and turned into, you know, giant, wonderful pieces of theater here. And, you know, I'm not, you know, 6'5", and I don't have giant pectoral muscles. You know, I'm a very regular-looking Joe. So I think, you know, for some reason, I feel like L.A. wasn't necessarily the place for me right away. Who knows, one day, maybe in the future, but right now I'm having a lot of fun.
Well, you're making a good career choice, because a lot of casting directors for film have told me through the years that they really want to hire stage actors, because you guys know how to learn lines, you know how to get into character. It's incredible how many film actors, you know, can play to the camera but aren't actors. They can't learn lines. Some of them don't even try anymore, and they dub them in later.
I couldn't even imagine coming at it from the other way, like starting as a film actor, and then...
That's why learning your craft on the stage is so important, because they know, you know, they don't have to do it 20 times over. If they have stage actors in a scene, you guys will get it and get it down the first time. They might do it two or three more times to get different angles.
Right.
But in terms of the quality of the scene, it's there. That's why people have gone to L.A. after they've mastered the stage here and maybe in New York. They go there, they have a big edge.
Right. No, I completely agree. I feel very fortunate. In my education too, in Nebraska, because I got my BA in theater performance, and I feel like that has rounded me as an actor. You know, there's people who have a lot of just natural talent. People who don't necessarily need a degree. They don't necessarily need any sort of formal training. But the thing that they're lacking is a guidance. And I think a lot of times people think that they do know it all. And
that's the kiss of death for a young actor. I mean, I know people in their 50s have been doing this for 25 years, and they say they're just still learning.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I'll be learning until, you know, hopefully if I make it to 90 years old, I'll be learning the whole time.
Okay, speaking of the future, tell me where James Dunn is going to be 5 years from now in your career. Where do you see yourself?
Well, hopefully if I have my druthers, I would see myself with, you know, maybe owning my own storefront, having my own theater, having my own ensemble with the Plagiarist, the company that I've started. I mean, that would be happy if this theater company.
Well, what moves you to have your own theater company? Is it you want to have control? You want to? What's the reasoning behind it?
Well, that's a very good question, because is it the fact that I want to be in control? I want to be making the decisions. I have something to say differently about way shows could be created. I think it's, I want to be part of a community. And I am already a part of a larger community, but I would like to be part of a community that I help create and I help cultivate as well. As far as creating new works is concerned, that's the part that I think that I really enjoy and really want to see myself doing more.
So you're a playwright also?
Pardon?
You're a playwright also?
Yes, yeah. Well, we wrote, I helped write Living the Dream. We've got a few other projects coming up. I've written a few things in the past for the Rhino Festival. So creating new work, whether it be through improvisation, whether it be through music, shadow puppetry, noise, any sort of other experimental medium is really what excites me.
Great, because that's what we need, and that's what Chicago's famous for, the young groups that push the envelope and take us to new heights.
I agree, yeah.
Steppenwolf started out that way, and many of the others that have moved on, you know. So that's great. I'm glad. Do you do musicals? Are you a singer or dancer or anything like that?
I don't know. I really want somebody to tell me and be honest with me, tell me if I can sing or not, because sometimes I think I can. But
do you audition for musicals?
No, unless it's real, something real flap happy and where it's completely a character voice throughout the entire thing. I was in a Friends original musical about Watergate once, where I played John Dean. And that was fun, but I'm not a real musical guy. I love musicals. I love seeing them and going to them. And I'd be interested in doing more musical theater, but I really want somebody to tell me whether or not I can sing.
Well, tell you, just go audition for some of the, you know, for Circle or Porchlight or those. They'll let you know pretty quick.
Yeah, that's probably.
But I'll tell you what you're doing now is terrific. I think, in a very low key way, you really anchor Resort 76.
Oh, thank you.
And I think ultimately the success of the show. I mean, you're the foreman. All the action goes around you. They're all trying to bribe you, cajole you, sweet talk you, do everything to get involved with the cat. So you're like the guy.
I'm kind of like the mafia don, except in a completely different way.
Yeah, in the most low key way. You're also going to be in another show at Infamous Commonwealth coming up, right?
Yes, I'm going to be in. We are doing Keeley & Du coming up, which is a very controversial but wonderfully written piece that I believe is going up in February. February of 2008 is when we open up, and I'm really looking forward to that role. And I'll be acting with our Infamous Commonwealth's artistic director will be in that show as well.
And that is?
Genevieve Thompson.
Yeah, she's terrific. So that's cool.
She's the bee's knees.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, we wish you the best of luck. I think you're an emerging talent in this town. And it was just so nice to come and see Resort 76, a play I knew nothing about, and come away with something I thought was artistically valid and quite entertaining.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words. And I really want to take a second to appreciate everything that you do for getting people to come see theater in Chicago. I love your website, and I really do think that you do a lot to get butts in seats, as they say.
That's what we're trying to do, and with Talk Theater and with Mark Meyer, my partner in Talk Theater, we're working real hard to try and do that. And I know we're getting a lot of people to listen to the podcast and coming on our sites, and that's what it's about. It's our way of giving a little bit back for all the great nights of entertainment we have.
Well, that's really nice of you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the interview. And folks, go see a play this week. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Hello, Chicago. Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of August 13th, 2007. Avenue Q, the Tony Award-winning smash, will be holding its Chicago premiere with a limited two-week engagement starting on May 27th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Avenue Q, which is the hit musical about trying to make it in New York with big dreams and a tiny bank account, is the creation of a host of theater artists and features those famous music and lyrics by Robert Lopez and Jeff Marks. The show won three 2004 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Best Original Score of a Musical by Robert Lopez and Jeff Marks, and Best Book of a Musical by Jeff Witte. So get ready, Chicago. Avenue Q will be here for a limited two-week engagement on May 27th. Individual ticket pricing and an on-sale date have yet to be announced. That's why you have to stay tuned right here to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. A new block of Wicked tickets are on sale. That's right, the record-breaking Chicago company of Wicked, which is now the longest-running Broadway show in Chicago history, has opened up a block of tickets for the performances ranging from November 6th through January 27th. The tickets went on sale to the public last Friday, August 10th. Wicked, of course, performs in an open run at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, aka the Oriental Theater. Those new tickets are available now, so get them today. Chicago Shakespeare Theater will kick off its 21st season with Cymbeline, and the staging being done by artistic director Barbara Gaines. Cymbeline inaugurates the theater's three-play subscription series as previews begin on September 1st. Director Barbara Gaines says, "I'm delighted to bring this tale of forgiveness and hope to Chicago audiences." And Chicago is certainly happy that she has brought it to us. There are many programs in conjunction with the performances of Cymbeline. For more information on those, be sure to click on over to the Theater in Chicago news page. And for your chance to purchase tickets for Cymbeline and other Chicago Shakespeare Theater shows, call the box office at 312-595-5600. Again, that's 312-595-5600. Or visit the theater's website at www.chicagoshakes.com. We, here at Talk Theater in Chicago, are proud to announce the launch of EveryZing Search in our sidebar. That's right, Theater in Chicago has partnered with EveryZing, the world's most powerful multimedia search platform. Chicago theater fans and theater fans everywhere will easily be able to search inside of and uncover specific content from the Talk Theater in Chicago's massive audio archive. Using EveryZing's world-class speech-to-text technology, users will be able to navigate within the media files using EveryZing's snippet navigation interface. That means you will be able to search for specific shows, specific artists, specific theaters, and specific phrases. Not only that, you can play it right from the point it is mentioned inside the audio file. This is very powerful technology, and we are very proud to be partnered with EveryZing. If you haven't had a chance to try it out yet, click on over to the Talk Theater in Chicago website, look on the right side of the page, and search for whatever your heart desires. Thank you very much, EveryZing. We're proud to have you on board. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from The Tragedy of King Lear, Act 1, Scene 1. Do you smell a fault? Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. Until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to our new segment. It is the Talking Reviews. My guest reviewer is a fellow critic who is an expert on theater and an expert on baseball, too, Al Breslov. Hello, Al.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. I thought it would be great to have you talk about the Chicago Children's Theater show, Hannes and Me, now playing at the Goodman.
Well, I heard you say I'm an expert. I'm not an expert. I've just been a season ticket holder and been to a lot of baseball games. I did love the show. I thought it was probably one of the best things. In fact, I think I would like to see that show not as a children's theater show, but as a show for everybody, because that's what it is. It's really
It's an adult-friendly show.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's just something it's heartwarming. It's also a great story. And kids, you know, the kids sitting around me were young, and they were really into it. They were watching it.
Yeah, I didn't think it would play to the 8-9-year-olds as much as it would play to, you know, 10-12-year-olds. But it seemed to play very well with it.
There was a little girl sitting behind me. I don't think she was more than 7 or 8. Her eyes, I mean, I don't think she blinked.
Wow.
She was just amazed at what she saw, and I was amazed at watching her. And it was just a delightful show.
Well, it's a show about Hannes Wagner, who's one of the traditional ball players, and this kid, the perpetual loser, the kid that always makes the last out. See, I can relate to that. I was usually the guy that made the last out because you had to get in the game.
Yeah, I was lucky to get off the bench most of the time.
Yeah.
That's why I say I watched a lot of baseball.
Yeah, me too.
You know, when I was in high school, I think I was a fourth string catcher. And I used to do a lot of writing down in a notebook and watching everything. And
that's why we end up writers, I think. You know?
Yeah, I think so, because I did a lot of writing. You know, every pitch that everybody do, but it's not just about the kid being the perpetual loser, but it's about more than, you know, that he all of a sudden becomes somebody that he learns about life. And I think the beauty of the story is that he's looking for something that's going to bring his family back to the way it was and make him the winner and all the dreams that somebody from a divorced home would have. And he has the biggest dream in the world. I mean, have Wagner come back and, you know, come from time and come in your room and give you that opportunity to win a ball game and all the neat things that happen. And
yeah, that was cute.
Got the kids. I think the kids who are just amazed at how this kid reacts to everything.
Well, and it proposed that, you know, the baseball card is worth $1 million, and that, you know, there'd be this magic bullet and life would change. And it was a good lesson to the kids, because that is not what happens.
Right. Not what happened, and then life does not work that way.
Yeah, and that's a solid lesson about it. Even though the kid was changed and he was helped by it, you know, and never give up your dream. But it had a good sense of morality too.
I
think it's a terrific show for a father and a son.
Yeah,
and that's rare in theater.
Right. There's not many things that you can go to where you sit down and from the very beginning. I mean, they were throwing all the actors were throwing baseballs, you know, little rubber balls back and forth with the audience. And the kids were like running around, and then I thought, oh my God, how are they going to get them to calm down now? You got them all worked up. It's like giving them cotton candy before they go into a class. They're going to be all hyped up because they've been throwing the ball and catching it and all that. But they did. They quieted down.
They got into the story, and
they just loved it.
Well, that Tim Rock, it's a breakout role for him too.
Yeah,
who plays the boy?
He was magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, a great supporting cast of Equity players, but I thought Tim Rock stole the show. And this kind of balances out the little girls' show, the High School Musical that's around that appeals to the little girls. So if your family has little boys and little girls, you take the boy to the Hannes and Me and the girl to see High School Musical, and they're both happy.
Yeah, although I think some of the boys like High School Musical, too.
Yeah, some of them. They just won't admit it.
They want to make it just a girl show. It's kind of a fun show, and I know everybody in the world is doing it. Every school is doing it. Every theater is doing it. But Disney does it right. I mean, they did an unbelievable job with that one.
Yeah, they sure did. The other show I'd like to talk to you about is the Musical Review, or Ron Hocking, who is such a pro. His new show that just opened at the Mercury Theater, the Men and Their Music. Tell us what you thought of that show.
Well, I was very, very impressed. First of all, I've seen him do his Sinatra things before, and I kind of was not expecting his range of characters and how strong he was in most of them that he did. 95% of them were so recognizable and so well done.
Yeah, this guy is an impersonator, but he can sing in the style, too, and he's effective. It was amazing.
Well, his voice, his vocal range is much greater than I thought it was. And the other thing is that he just loves what he does, and you can tell it, you can feel it, that he, getting on that stage is like, that's what his life's all about, to make people want to move, to get the audience to dance. I mean, to me, the only thing that I would change about it, I would move it from the Mercury Theater. I would try to get it into more like a cabaret setting. I think people sitting at a table with a drink where they could have a dance floor.
Like the Black Orchard?
Yeah, the Black Orchard. Great. Yeah. Or the other place that might be a very effective thing that wouldn't have that same feeling, but for tourists would be when they close the Spelling Bee, that little, the theater that they have at Water, the Drury Lane. Because there's so many people that are downtown that this show, age group wise, would appeal to.
Unfortunately, they're bringing altar boys in there, which will probably have a long run. But I agree with you. That's the kind of venue.
Yeah, it needs to be an intimate theater, which the Mercury is. But I think the area that it's in, the neighborhood, it's a very young neighborhood. You know, standing outside at intermission, looking at all the restaurants with all the people sitting outside and eating, I think the average age became like 34, only because I came outside. It probably was 28 before I walked outside.
Yeah, when you and I came out, we aged the
we
average.
We aged the group around us.
Yeah.
It's a great show.
Because a lot of them don't know.
People in the 50s, that are 50 years old, late 40s and 50s, my God, it's everybody they remember.
Yeah.
So it brings back a lot of memories.
It sure does.
You know, things that you did in high school and things that you did in college. And
well, he does Bobby Darin, Ray Charles, Lou Rawls, Jimmy Durante, Johnny Mathis, Nat King Cole, Tony Bennett.
Not only Nat King Cole, he did Nat King Cole's daughter.
Yeah,
And did a great job. But I mean, he brought his Frank Sinatra back in, and he did his Sammy Davis and Dean Martin, the Rat Pack. But he did so many other people, and he did them so well, and he slipped in and out of each character as he changed.
That's why they call him the chameleon.
Yeah,
yeah.
He really does it well, quickly, and it's, even when he was putting on little things, in the background, he's changing and, grabbing his glass and his fake cigarette and all the other stuff. Having the girls' background, doing some little vocals with them and having a very nice orchestra as well.
Yeah, they good sound, yeah.
Yeah, good sound, and for a small theater, he filled the place with music. I was very impressed. In fact, I think I've called all the guys that I bowl with who are my age group, and we're not bowling now, so I don't have a chance to talk to them, but I called them all and said, you got to see it. You got to see it.
Yeah, our mutual friend Marilyn Eisenberg said the same thing. She's been recommending it around to her circuit of people. It is a good group show, because you notice the group that was sitting up in the front, they were having a ball.
Oh, yeah, those ladies, I think one of them, I don't think she wanted to leave. she just didn't want the show to be over. She probably could have stayed for a long time. But there were a lot of people I know that came in groups and have dinner at one of the restaurants, and then they came over there, and then they didn't like where their seats were, so they went up and they asked if they could move their seats around so they could all be together. So they ended up together, and they had a ball.
Yeah, this guy is such a consummate pro. He should be playing Vegas.
Yeah. But, it's hard because you got to – but, everybody talks about Danny Gans.
Yeah, right.
Who is magnificent. And now, I got to tell you, I'm putting him on the same level with Danny Gans.
That's what Marilyn Eisenberg said, too. I have not seen Gans, but Several people said that, too.
Originally, like I say, I never knew his range to be this great. I thought, okay, he's good at what he does. He's found his little niche. He's going to do Frank Sinatra's. Like, there's, I'm sure, 100 people out there who do Elvis and only do Elvis and can't do anything else. So that's their niche. But here, he does it all.
Yeah, he sure does.
Yeah, and he does it with class. Very classy, and he's a local kid, so it's all, you know, he's from Chicago. It's always nice to see someone of your own do something that, and he feels it. You know, you watch him, and you feel that he's doing it for his people. That's the people of Chicago.
So in the dark days of August, we certainly have a terrific show to see. I think Ron Hocking is a major talent. He's worth seeing. It's a good date show, good group show.
Yeah, it is. It's just the only thing that people have to watch out when they go to that one is, when the Cubs are home for a night game or something, it's going to be a little congested in the area, so they better give themselves plenty of time.
Yeah, yeah, and do valet park. Spend the money for valet parking because it's hard to park around it. But that's normal in a lot of the places.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, that because it's Wrigleyville, you got a lot of stuff happening.
True.
But it's worth the trip from anywhere.
Well, Al, thank you so much. This has been terrific. And folks, just keep listening. We'll have a different guest reviewer on every week. Al, I'll see you around the theater.
I'll see you at the theater, Sam.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank James Dunn for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Al Breslaw for coming on the show. He is always a welcome guest. And of course, I would like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.